Welcome to the Curious Women Podcast. I'm your host, Kylie Fignano, and I'm here with my co-host, Meg Hager. Here, we're going to have chats about women's health to teach you the things that you didn't know you didn't know.
Oh, you guys, this interview, now I feel like I take away how much I mean this because I say it about every single person.
I know.
But this really, in its own really super unique, special way, this was just, it was just so good. The annoying thing is that it just scratched the surface. There are so many more things that I wanted to ask Justine about Ayurveda. And I think that is kind of what she was trying to illustrate, is that it's a whole system.
Right.
We're not going to get everything that we want or need in our, you know, hour-long conversation.
Totally. Especially because I think it's such a problem, at least in the Western world, and we've talked about this a lot too. People are very drawn to, like, what's sexy. And part of the issue of, like, a lot of things with, like, cultural appropriation and whatnot is just people, even just accidentally, trying to pick out little pieces of a bigger, larger, more significant system. And it kind of takes away from the meaning of it all. You know what I mean?
100%. I think you said it perfectly. What is sexy? And right now, food is a sexy thing. And so you guys will hear, the only thing that we even knew remotely about Ayurveda coming into this conversation is that you were supposed to eat a certain way. And I'll tell you what, I like kind of tried to ask her, like, what would you do with this particular, in this particular instance? Hoping that she would go into this, like, well, we would tell you to eat this way or change this thing or blah, blah, blah. Why did I think that that's what was going to happen? She literally told us that's not how it works. And it's, again, it's a reflection of, you know, my Western lens, which is what's the cool, fun, sexy thing.
Right. Right. Well, you know, Totally. I think it's not that it's a difficult job, but it's hard for us because one of our goals in starting this podcast was to take these big, hard to understand or not well-known concepts that have to do with women's health and put them into these like tiny little like actionable steps. And we just can't do that with everything, especially something like Ayurveda. So, but I think did a very good job, though. She did a very good job. She was very helpful. I cannot wait for you guys.
She was great. Let me tell you, I loved when a piece of her popped through and she was talking about your goddamn turmeric lattes. Oh, I was like, girl, we see you. Hello. Oh, it was so great. It was so great. Yeah. Hey, speaking of, what you got over there? What are you drinking?
I'm being super boring today. I just have my water and my Avocetol/Ovacetol. We don't know how it's pronounced. Somebody tell me how this stupid thing
somebody
is pronounced,
tell her. And then somebody help leave me. Leave a comment with the spelling of it, because every time you say it, I have no fucking clue what you're talking about.
I can tell you how it's spelled. It's O-V-A-S-I-T-O-L, because it's written on my bottle. That's the only reason I know.
That's so, all right. That's a perfectly acceptable boring.
My
right?
It keeps going on and off. I agree. I already had the coffee. Let's see. Yeah, I'm being boring today. I will tell you though, I have a special surprise on the way. But it's taking so long to get here. But
because you're in Hawaii, I don't feel bad for you. Wait, did you? If I guess it, will you tell me? If I guess it, will you tell me?
Yes, if did you guess, I'll tell you.
Did you order Olipop?
I didn't, but I was thinking about it.
To me, that's a special surprise you should be receiving.
You know what? I was, and I'm not opposed to it. I'm gonna order some Olipop. This one, I think it's because I am where I am, but I also think it's on like pre-order or something. Like maybe they make it in batches or something. And they don't ship. It's not like, I don't know. I haven't figured it out.
Is this something fun that I'm going to want?
Yes.
Well, now I need to know.
I can't. I'll tell you when it gets here, so that
is it
I
a can drink?
Send you some. Yes, it's a drink. I can send you.
Okay.
Some.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, I like to get mail. That's perfect. That's a great. Okay. That's great. Okay.
Perfect. So, what are you drinking today?
Yeah, I made an iced latte 2 or 3 hours ago. I'm still working on.
Is it still
not an iced latte? It's cold.
A wet, watery latte that used to have ice in it? Is that
it's a wet coffee. It's not even a latte. It's a wet coffee. That's all it is.
A wet
I made it with, you know, Four Sigmatic has those little instant packets I did. This one has the lion's mane in it, which I thought would be very appropriate for this conversation. In fact, that was planned. You know what I've been drinking lately?
What?
Whoa. Listen, I almost don't even want to say soy milk. I know.
Oh,
I know. I mean, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me anymore. I always make sure it's organic, blah, blah, blah. But I just think it's working better for me.
There you
go. It's working better for me.
Mm-hmm. I switch between soy milk and Ripple milk.
Just that pea protein milk, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes I'll do oat milk because I like the way it tastes in my coffee better.
Yes.
But the soy milk and the pea milk are like really, that's how it's, I love that they're just so close in protein. To like regular milk. Yeah, I know. It all comes down to fucking protein, man.
Such a fucking dietitian, Meg.
So annoying. So wait. I think we need to give you a shout out because somebody washed their hair yesterday, right?
Oh, you guys. Wait a minute. Yo, you can't see it. You can't see it, but I'm getting nice and close to the camera.
Look
not
at
a
that.
Grease, not a grease streak to be seen. Let me do you one better, Meg. Listen to this. I blow dried my hair last night. I know.
No, you did not.
I blow dried my hair last night. I've probably blow dried my hair 5 times in the last entire year. It doesn't
matter.
I mean, I know. And then I also straightened it. Who am I?
You? What? Who are you and what have you done with Kylie? What's going on? It looks
we should all be worried. Thank you. Do you see? I'm not giving you an option but to say that as I flip it obnoxiously in the direction.
No, please do. We love hair flips on this show. You know that. We love them. Yes.
I forgot about that little thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh my God.
I'm rocking a little dry shampoo, but you can't even tell because my hair is past the point of savior from dry shampoo.
Like, past the point of savior. Listen, we all know. You're at ball cap stage.
I am. Mm-hmm. But you know, my head's too small to fit most ball caps.
Do you have a turtle head? That's what we call it in my family.
I do. I have a turtle head.
My dad has a turtle head too. I'll send you some of his ball caps.
Okay. Thank you, Papa Fagnano.
Papa Steve. Papa Steve, giving Papa one Steve. For the team. The last time I was home, my mother said, "Kylie, are you going to wash your hair tonight?" And she said it in front of Brian, and he just looked at her, and he said, "Don't even get me started. Your daughter is disgusting." I had no rebuttal. No rebuttal. And then I saw her the next day, and she's like, "Did you wash your hair?" And I was like, "Yes, can you not tell? Because that's more concerning."
That is more concerning. I would be way more offended if somebody didn't notice when I washed my hair versus if I just the fact that I didn't wash it.
I was a little offended. I have to say, that's why I'm talking about it, because I got a little self-conscious about it. Thanks, Mom.
Oh, God.
She'll hear this too. That'll be great. Very good. Oh my God. All right, you guys, listen. I can't wait for you to listen to this episode with Justine, and stay tuned till I think it's in the very last minute or so. She gives a ton of amazing information about where you can learn all of the like really intriguing and confusing things that she's teaching us about. And of course that will all be in the show notes. So if you're listening and you need a quick recap, just go there. So everything should be recapped for you there. Meg, any last words?
Nope. I'm just so excited. I do have one last word. I think that it's so I'm so excited for this because I think when we started our show, we were very focused on like women's health, medical kind of like conditions. And I love that we are now incorporating almost like a new belief system and introducing that to people who may not have known about it and might actually really be intrigued by it and be interested in it. So I think that it's just kind of a cool thing to learn about. And I'm really excited to hear what our listeners think.
I couldn't agree more, Meg. I was thinking about that the other day. We, in like 15 episodes, right? It's not like we've been doing this for very long, have really started to take a slight transition and just offer up information that you might not have even known was available, that you might be able to choose as your opportunity to give yourself the type of healing that you didn't even know was there. And that actually is at the core of what we're doing here. And Justine really helped illustrate how confusing that can be. So I, in like all of the most beautiful, wonderful ways, she's awesome. We 100% are going to ask her back because, you know, we didn't even get to talk about sex that much. And that's just a no-brainer.
Oh, that's it. That is a shame and a disservice to everybody.
A shame and a disservice.
So get your notebooks out. Listen intently. We're going to talk about butts. We're going to talk about sex. We're going to talk about all things Ayurveda and learning what it is, just to teach you the things you didn't know about Ayurveda.
And about all of your friends. Just wait until you listen. Okay. You're welcome. Enjoy.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Curious Women podcast. We are here with Justine. Is it Limos or Lemos?
Limos, yeah.
Limos. Okay. We are here with Justine Limos, Dr. Justine Limos. She is going to be talking to us today about the practice of Ayurveda, and we have so many burning questions that we cannot wait to get into with her. Justine, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. I'm super excited to be here with you.
Thank you.
I'm going to put Meg on the spot here real quick.
Go for it.
And what then else after is this, new? Justine, I want
to... In the environment of this podcast, what else is new?
So, Meg, before... Justine, before you go and explain everything
I'm
to
I'm going
to
explain everything to you. Just don't worry. Everything will be explained, okay?
This is why we brought her on. Meg, what do you know about Ayurveda? And I'll go after you. But what I want to know, tell the people, what do you know?
Nothing. Not a thing. I know. No.
Yeah. I'm excited now.
I know that it's a very ancient style of health, which I think but I learned that from you, Dr. Limos. It was very minimal. Kylie, what do you know?
I'm so glad to hear you say that, Meg, because I also know very little. Here's what I think I know. This is going to be funny. What is it that I think I know? I think I know that there are certain you fall into a certain category, and you can then – there's certain ways of eating that kind of go along with each of those little categories. Are there three categories? Are there four? I'm not sure. But one of the very first things that you said to us, Justine, was
And one little tiny aspect of that is how you eat and what you eat in order to stay healthy. It's a science of preventative care so that we alleviate suffering and live as long as possible with the least suffering and most joy as possible. So Ayurveda teaches us healthy, how to eat in our bodies, what herbs to take if things go out of balance. It teaches us what to do with our minds. It teaches us how to process emotions. It teaches us really a whole science of how to live from birth, actually even from conception all the way through to death.
Wow.
So it's a very vast wisdom science, yeah, that has its origins in ancient India and has vast application for modern humans.
It's kind of something that I'm curious about is I wholeheartedly believe that there's a lot of these ancient systems that there's a lot of truth to them. And there's a lot of I don't even think that they're that different from what our literature, like our scientific literature, at least in the West, says today in a lot of different aspects. So I want to hear from you. Have you come across any of those kind of like crossing paths where you see maybe Western science rooted in Ayurveda at all?
Well, the two disciplines are epistemologically different. That means that they have a different frame philosophically as to how to understand reality and the body and the self. And yet much of what we know from Ayurvedic wisdom is beginning to be supported by Western science. And many, many health complexes that are not well understood by Western science, when we look at them via the complex of Ayurveda, we understand them quite easily. For example, let me give you an example. Fibromyalgia. Western science, medicine doesn't really know what that is. It's just a name for a group of symptoms. It's a name for a group of symptoms, which doesn't tell us what it is. Ayurveda understands what that is through its own lens and understands how to make change in that particular imbalance through its lens. So I don't think that one is better than the other. I think that Western medicine is very useful for emergencies. It's very useful when imbalances have grown in the body. But the whole discipline is different. Let me give you an example. In ancient India, you paid the doctor when everybody was well.
What? Really?
Everybody was well. Everybody's healthy. So you go give the doctor money because they're doing a good job. Yeah, what? So think about that, right? Think about that.
Whoa, what a concept.
Could you imagine? Could you even? No, I actually can't. I can't imagine.
Right?
Can you? Okay. Can you continue? I'm fascinated to hear this. Can you continue your fibromyalgia example? So here with Western medicine, most people will just be told, you're anxious. I think you're depressed. There's nothing we can do. This is in your head. At best, they'll get these kind of dismissals. Versus what would the Ayurvedic approach to that be? And I love that you're starting here because this has nothing to do with food.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so this is where we do need to talk about the doshas. The doshas are a very important part of Ayurveda, but they're not the only part. It's kind of like when people hear about tantra, like classical Hindu tantra, and they're like, sex. And it's like, no, that's like this tiny part of the vast panoply of what tantra wisdom is. And it's in there, yes, but we don't have to obsess about it. And in the West, the doshas have become somewhat of an obsession. Like, what's your sign? Oh, I'm this, right? Because it's a marker of identity. And it's really important.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, it's really important, but not actually in the way that most people think it is. So anyhow, let's talk about what
Can I interrupt you real quick? Sorry, I want to, because I think this is another piece that differentiates these things. We get obsessed with what can I identify with in this thing? Who am I? How can I further identify who I am by somebody else's definition of category, so to speak, which is the way that our minds work. That's where people, myself included, I'm not excluding myself, find some sort of safety or grounding or sense of connection and belonging, because I'll speak for myself, feel otherwise very disconnected from that. But I think I can't. Okay, now go into this explanation.
And there's also nothing wrong with that. However, it can be used in a way that's kind of trivial and or a way that is over-identified. Now, dosha itself means defect. Itself means defect. We are talking about a defect away from the perfect divine bliss consciousness that is the fabric of your being.
Wow. That makes a lot of sense.
And dosha means defect. Away from the ideal, if you will.
Okay. So there are three doshas. To know something about the three doshas, we have to understand what is called the pancha mahabhutas. Pancha means five. That's actually how we get our word finger via Sanskrit.
Oh. Yeah.
I can do the whole etymology, but I won't bore you with it. So pancha means five. Maha means great. Bhuta means element. There are five great elements in Vedic thought. Those are earth, which is known as prithvi, jala, water, agni, fire, vayu, air, and akasha, ether. Ether is the space through which sound travels.
Oh, fun for our podcast.
And these elements naturally group together in ways that we can see reflected in nature. Water and earth frequently, you know, they group together. We find mud, you know, we find in a riverbank, we find earth and water together. And this creates what we call kapha dosha. Now, everyone has kapha dosha, not just kapha dosha, so-called people. Fire.
Oh.
Everyone has kapha dosha, and I'll tell you where it is, how it is manifest in your body, but everyone has it. Pitta dosha is fire, but with a little bit of humidity, a little bit of moisture, yeah? It groups together with a bit of water quite naturally, and everyone has pitta dosha. Air and ether group together, very light and dry, as what we call vata dosha, okay? So we have these three doshas, vata, pitta, and kapha, that everyone has inside of them in differing proportions, okay? Mm. And it's a grand metaphor. Now, vata is responsible for everything that is transportation, communication, and motion in our bodies and outside. On a windy day, we see a lot of movement. What is happening is there's a great deal of vata dosha on that day. It's cold and dry and windy. Mm. Everyone has pitta dosha. Pitta dosha is responsible for our digestion, our transformation, and our metabolism. Everybody's got a metabolism. You all got pitta dosha. Mm-hmm. Kapha dosha is responsible for our immunity, our strength, and our stability. When kapha dosha is totally gone, you have no immunity and you're not doing well at all in this body. So when we talk about the percentages of those doshas in the body, then we get a certain profile of a person who has more vata dosha defect, mm-hmm. who has more pitta dosha, who has more kapha dosha. And we'll see these groupings in body type, in face, and in mannerism. One of the best ways, okay, there's a few simple, easy ways to tell what your doshas are.
You're getting excited about this.
I'm excited about this. I can't wait to hear these.
That isn't about taking a test, okay? And I don't mean to offend anyone, okay? So no, like, I'm sorry if I offend or trigger anyone. Your butt is really a good indicator of your dosha.
I love that.
Oh my God.
I love that.
Vata people have no butt. Like, there is no back end on vata people. They're just like, it's like not there. They cannot shake it. They cannot twerk. They do, like, vata dosha people, no, it's like a bone. Like, it's not happening, right?
Oh, I am, for those of you who are not watching us, I just showed Justine my behind in it. Uh-huh. I think I'm vata.
Although you can definitely twerk. If there's nothing there, you're twerking.
I can't
something, okay?
Twerk. It's more like twerking the bones. Like, that's
right, twerking the bone. That's like, it's like me when I try to twerk. I'm like, oh my God. Like, I have a lot of vata dosha. I'm vata and pitta. And vata sub pitta. And I'm like, could something shake down there? Like, it's like not happening, right?
This is just the absolute last thing I
right. Wait, it's going to get even juicier.
I love it.
It's going to get juicier. Okay.
All right. Let's go.
Okay. Because I need to know what I am, because that's the opposite.
Well, yeah. Okay. And there's a lot to talk about here. Okay. Pitta dosha people, predominant people, their butts like stick out at you. Like, they've got really good shelf butts, like gymnast butts, because they tend to be athletes, you know? And they're like, they've got like really perky, like really good butts, you know, like stereotypically, like, you're like, you know, you're just going to like have good butts.
That's amazing. Which one is this again? This
Pitta dosha.
Yeah.
Pitta dosha people tend to be more type A. They tend to be a bit more muscular in their build. They've got a bit more fire, a bit more intensity. They're getting shit done. You know, like that's your Pitta dosha. But Vata dosha people are like airy, fairy, spaced out, artistic, like way too talkative. You know, ungrounded. Right? Okay.
All right, so we now
Okay. Now we got to talk about kapha dosha, and then we got to talk about sex.
Okay. Oh, yes.
Always. Okay, yes, it's happening. Here. Okay, always yes.
Okay. Kapha dosha people's butts tend to be wider and larger. Kapha dosha people tend to be the heaviest body type. You know, and Ayurveda is very body positive. It's like people have these beautiful bodies; they are different, right?
Right.
So the butt test is a really good way to determine your doshas.
I love
it. I'm totally going to offend somebody about this, and I apologize.
Well, that's not on you. Right.
But okay, also, good, I think you. That, like you I said, it's coming it. From a place of body positivity. You're not offending right? someone. You're just, they're right? descriptive. Yeah.
Actually, descriptive. There was a really famous Ayurvedic doctor, Dr. John Dooliard, and he started to work with college athletics teams. And all he did was like look at the doshas of the athletes. Like in a basketball team, and was like, you're doing the wrong thing. Like, we have to send the little Vata people like running really fast on the basketball court, and then the Kapha people like hang out back by the basket, they chill out, and then you throw them the ball and they put it in. Like, you just got to work with what you've got, right?
Oh,
don't work against who you are,
this
right?
I love that. Okay,
the other thing, like, you can really tell, like, your attitude towards sex is like a really good indicator of your doshas.
Okay.
Like Vata dosha people like have really creative sex and like it might be really funny, but then they get distracted halfway through and they're like, let me go do something different because, you know, like something else was more exciting at the moment, right? Right? It's just like...
Yes!
I'm laughing because I joke with my husband about how I can't stay in one position.
Right? That's very Vata dosha. Vata dosha is movement. They're like, let me try this creative position. Let me try this creative position. Oh, maybe I could put my foot behind my head. That seems really exciting. Oh, wait, I'm uncomfortable because I'm really bony. Like, right? Because Vata dosha people are really bony.
Get Jason back in the room. Get him back in the room.
Okay. You want to hear about Pitta dosha people sex?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So they're like the athletes. No. They're like the athletes and they're like the type A because so they have like the best sex in the world. And it's like very passionate. Or at least they think it's the best sex in the world because they're Pitta dosha. And Pitta dosha people have to be the best. That's like their jam. It's like, well, I'm better than like that is who I am, right? So they have like the most passionate, sexy sex that is like smoldering with intensity. And then they because they're fire, right? And then they like high five each other afterwards and they're like, yeah, that was awesome.
I am feeling so seen.
That's right. I see you. I hear you. Okay.
This is so great. Okay.
Kapha dosha people who are more air, who are more earth and water, like they're the most loving people. They're the most loving people. Like they give the best hugs and they're just like so nurturing. And lovely. And quite frankly, Kapha dosha people tend to be really lazy. Like they just want to like relax and take naps. And so like they're really, really hard to get motivated to have sex. Like I have a friend who has a Kapha dosha husband and she's very Pitta. And she's like, like what do I have to do to get him to have sex with me? Like she's like buying pheromones and like trying to get – and it's just like so much motivation for them, you know. But like once they're aroused, they're extremely good lovers, like very caring, supportive, and last for the long haul because like Kapha dosha has staying power, right?
Wow.
So now you know everything about your doshas and like I figure we're done here. Like my work is done here.
Now that we know what our
I know so much more about so many people in my life
that's right
than they've ever told me based on this information.
Now you know
and, like,
their doshas.
So I do every single one you described I was like here's a list of people. Here's a list of people. Oh, that totally tracks. Oh, my God.
Okay. So we just determined our dosha through the butt and sex test, which deep apologies and deep reverence to this system of ancient wisdom. I do not mean my humorous portrayal of the doshas to be any discredit to the system or the wisdom, but it's also a way that we can connect into it via our modern lens. Like if I come in and I just drop a bunch of Sanskrit, then we're disconnected. But like, you know, sex and butts, we're all connected in that.
Absolutely.
So everybody gets that. We all understand. Everybody gets that.
We understand that language.
So
for sure.
Now we know something about our doshas. Then, see, Ayurveda teaches us wisdom of how, for example, we eat for our doshas. But that's just one small portion of how to live in a vata body, or how to live in a pitta body, or how to live in a kapha incarnation, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I have one question. Are you willing to share with us what your dosha is?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm vata and pitta. So we can be a combination of two or sometimes three doshas. Oh. And I'm very much vata dosha with a sub dosha of pitta dosha, right? Mm. There's no kapha hanging out here, like, at all. My whole family, there's no kapha. It's like, it gets a little intense. So let's see. What was I going to say? I lost my train of thought. Anyhow, ask me a good question. That's okay.
I was going to
I remembered it, but you asked me first.
Oh, is it possible to, can your doshas change over a lifetime or do they shift or is it just kind of, it is what it is?
Really great question and actually comes to what I was wanting to talk about.
Perfect.
So your doshas are determined at the moment of conception, when the egg and sperm meet. So if your parents are like getting it on a hot summer night in like Hawaii after eating Thai food, like, right? Like some pitta dosha might come through, right?
Okay.
And if mom had some pitta and dad had some pitta, of course it's genetic. I mean, this is who we are through the incarnations. And everything in the world, the doshas are universal intelligences. So we can understand everything in the world through the doshas. And quite naturally, through the lifetime, this does not change your core constitution. So like my constitution, my prakriti is vata pitta. And that will not change. However, childhood is more kapha dosha. You know, kids have to sleep all the time. Little kids, they sleep all the time and they're all drooly and like they're like snot is everywhere and they're just like crying and they're really watery. And I mean, when you're really young, even your poop and pee, you know, it's like excessive, right?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Right.
And so you can be a child who, and kapha dosha is always growing. Kapha dosha, like the earth, is always growing and children are growing, right? Which is why children are more prone to kapha dosha imbalances like colds. Kids always have colds, you know what I mean? And always having to blow their nose and wipe their nose, right? In middle age, we go into a cycle that's more pitta dosha. We're more focused. We're perhaps working on the career. We're managing a household. We're dealing with a lot of fire. And then quite naturally, as we age, we become more vata dosha. And in any, with any constitution. And we'll notice older people, vata is the nervous system. It's the nervous system. And anxiety is vata dosha. Old people tend to get more anxiety. They tend to get more dryness, dry skin, dry joints, right? Popping and cracking joints, osteoarthritis, osteoporosis, et cetera, in old age. So we move through those phases through life with our core constitution. And guess what? We can also develop imbalances in a particular dosha. For example, a pitta dosha person could get fibromyalgia, or what we might call fibromyalgia. And we were talking about that at the beginning, so I wanted to full circle
around
to that.
Bring us back.
That's right. So fibromyalgia is a vata dosha imbalance. You were saying, oh, you might be told you're anxious. Well, yes, you are anxious because that's the nervous system. And it's actually vata dosha, the nervous system lodging inside the muscle tissue at what we call mamsa dhatu, so that the muscles themselves become oversensitive because Vata dosha, air and ether, has lodged inside of the muscles, and the nerves are too fired up, and so you register just like sitting as extreme pain.
Wow.
Whoa.
Wow.
Right? And so what do we need to do? We need to tame Vata dosha. That's what we need to do from an Ayurvedic perspective. And it's not like, oh, we just fix the anxiety. No, when we tame Vata dosha, the anxiety is fixed and the fibromyalgia dissipates. It's all one package, the body and the mind.
Right.
And all the other things.
So does that mean like people who have primarily Vata constitutions, are they more prone then to Vata imbalance disorders?
So the classical literature and more classical trained practitioner, I'm a clinical practitioner, which means it's slightly different. I like look at what's happening on the ground. I don't try and apply a theory to the person. I'm like, I get really curious and I'm like, huh, okay, let's talk about that. So the classical literature would have us believe that that is the case. And it is true that someone with Vata dosha in their constitution may be more prone to Vata disorders. Mm-hmm. However, in the modern culture, we have so much opportunity to go out of balance in so many different directions that I see Kapha dosha people with Vata imbalances. Mm-hmm. And I see I see Vata people with Kapha imbalances. And I just see so much because it all comes down to what we call the mistake of the intellect. The mistake of the intellect.
Tell us about this. What is this?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you about mistake of the intellect. Well, you know, humans, we have this ability to do things which are contrary to our nature. It's part of the it's part of the beauty of being a human. Cows can't eat ice cream at midnight. They don't have that option.
Right.
They can only eat grass.
Right.
But as humans, we can like smoke methamphetamines. Right.
Right.
And like I've had clients, clients who have like had a long, who aren't on meth right now, but maybe they had that in their past. And I'm always curious. I'm like, huh, that's going to cause a Vata dosha imbalance. It's going to be really drying to the tissues. Right.
Yeah.
And so we're dealing with that imbalance. And we have we have this ability to move ourselves out of balance in so many different ways. Most people in America, let me just say, most people in America have some degree of a Vata dosha imbalance plus something else. Our lifestyle is so nervous system, you know, disruptive. People don't have a practice of meditation. They don't have a practice of oil massage. They don't have a practice of being quiet. So we're going to get the nervous system is going to be so onslaughted and inundated with information.
I think that's
really interesting.
That really, I'm sure you could agree, Kylie, both you and I probably in our practices see that all the time. You dealing with mostly gut issues and I'm with acne and so, it's just wild. So yeah, that really rings true.
Wow. Okay. So, oh gosh, I had like 14 questions that came up in all of that. let me see. let's stick with fibromyalgia.
Okay.
How would you go? Okay, so
which is not, by the way, a sole focus of my practice or anything. We're just using this as an example.
Yeah.
I have worked with it a lot. Let's stick with it.
Okay.
And yes. Okay. Right. So this could input anything here. What? So we know that these doshas are the imbalances and that there are certain types of modern diagnoses that will kind of fit into these doshas. What do we then do to go about correcting the imbalance? Because like we said before, you're not handing somebody a medication, you're not giving them a prescription, and most importantly, maybe you're not just dismissing them.
Right. Absolutely not. So imbalances arise at many different layers of the self. And we have to be careful in assessing where the root cause of that imbalance resides. Is it actually in the mind and in the emotions? In which case, if I intervene at the physical body and maybe we do move into a direction of diet, or maybe we do use certain herbs or herbal formulas, okay, we might see some alleviation of the suffering that that person is experiencing. But if it's really an emotional issue, we need to really find where that emotional issue resides and then work with the Vedic counseling methods that we have to shift and change that emotion. Imbalances can also get lodged and frequently do get lodged at the energy layer of the body. That is what we call the pranamaya kosha. This is where the chakras are and the nadis, the vital flows. And then we need to take interventions on that level. I would say that if I were pressed, I don't know, like 20% of imbalances, 15% of imbalances are strictly the physical and do not have an emotional or energetic component. There are also imbalances that reside in the what we call the karmic layer. This is, for example, why does one person come in with an arm that's deformed? Like, right. They're born with that and the other person isn't, right? Mm. And this is at the layer of what we call the Vijnana Gyanamaya Kosha, and we actually have remedies that work at that layer as well.
Okay.
Which are more ritual processes. And, you know, this gets kind of to the outer edge of what some clients are interested in, and that's fine. Like, mm-hmm. we have to be willing and ready to pursue those types of remedies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we use everything. Everything under the sun is medicine. Essential oil, herbs, gemstones, like meditation, emotional release, food, lifestyle changes. What time are you going to bed? Mm-hmm. Are you getting enough sleep? Are you staying mm-hmm. in bed too long? Oil massage, like everything becomes medicine. Mm-hmm. And it is an art to not only know what is the right remedy for an individual, but what is that remedy that they'll actually do?
Yeah.
Because guess what? The lotion doesn't work if it stays in the jar.
Yeah. That's a great saying. I love that.
I really appreciate this kind of acknowledgement of it's so much more than the physical body that is required to have attention given to in order for healing.
Yeah.
Because I don't do anything with Ayurvedic approaches. And there are so many people that I see where I think, you know, I can manipulate the diet. I can supplement the hell out of this person. Mm-hmm. And they're only going to go a fraction of the way because some part of them doesn't believe that they're going to heal or that they can or that they deserve it. Or, you know, they're putting this step way ahead of other work that needs to happen. And that's, you know, I really, really, in this season of things for myself, appreciate that particular kind of nod.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seems like it's really at the core of what might be the difference between Western and Ayurvedic approaches.
Yeah. I believe so. I believe so. That there's this interface between the mind and body, between the psychological and the physical and the somatic, that really needs to be deeply addressed. I find this in the case of weight loss very frequently, that if clients come for weight loss, I think we've talked about this, you know, there's often 90% of the time a deep reservoir of emotional pain and or fear that unless they're really ready to move through that, address it, we can work with any diet in the world. And unfortunately, the body has its own fortunately, the body is smart. The body is smart.
Right.
It does things for a purpose. And, you know, with gut issues, frequently there's deep reservoirs of anger that we'll find sometimes and with some frequency anger towards the mother. Oh. That's just going to put that out there. That person is, and acne too. Acne frequently is mother anger. Just going to say that. Mommy Issues comes out in acne. and perfectionism, third chakra perfectionism comes out with acne especially. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's all just something so Kylie.
They don't they don't let me out in public very much.
That's great, because we're thinking, how much more time do we have here? Because we need to bring her back.
Because we haven't talked about Vedic astrology. I haven't given you the predictions for...
No, that's right.
And anyhow, that's a different conversation.
Okay, so we've got at least two on the books now. Yeah, oh,
I know,
my God.
So excited.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay, I wanna go back just a minute.
Okay.
Where do these practices... or these guidelines or these rituals or traditions come from? Ancient India, but where, who, what group of people, how do I ask the question? Where does this come from?
So this knowledge has its origins in the Vedic wisdom of India. It is probably close to 5,000 years old.
Wow. Wow.
And 5,000 years of not just rule-based dogma, but like experimentation and living wisdom. It's a living tradition. And that's why I can say that like everything is medicine for a particular person at a particular time, right? In Ayurveda, there are not strict lists of like do's and don'ts. It's like, no, have the wisdom to not be eating ice cream at midnight, right? If you're a cow.
Right.
And so the rishis or ancient sages of India, we are told, cognized the knowledge and then distributed it for humans to live. Of course, Ayurveda very much influenced the system of Chinese medicine and Japanese medicine as well. They have certainly similarities and roots, and Tibetan medicine. We shouldn't forget Tibetan medicine is its own system, which all share this root in Himalayan and Vedantic tradition.
Now, this might be, I might be taking this in a direction that it's not intended to. So, but what, like, great, please.
I know, I'm so excited.
Is there anything to be said for, so at the time of conception, your dosha is sort of assigned. First of all, let me ask us first this question. How does that happen? So partly genetics, or is it entirely genetic?
That's a good question. That's a complex question. I would say partially genetic and partially karmic, but I'm not quite sure the two are actually different in my mind.
I could see that. Yeah,
think about that.
No, I can't.
You can't
anymore.
Think about
I can't
it.
Think
okay,
about
it
went
away.
I just went to it and it got like an instant jumble, and I thought, no, I gotta focus on this first.
Okay. So okay. I'm gonna say all partially genetic, partially karmic, and they might be the same thing.
Okay. And then from that point, is there anything about the dosha that is assigned to you that has any indication on particular types of experiences that you will have or will not have in this lifetime?
Not as much. There may be certain, that then we're really looking at the Vedic astrology, which is not Ayurvedic astrology. It's Vedic astrology. It's like a little pet peeve of mine when people call it Ayurvedic astrology, because it's very different.
Oh.
We can also call it Jyotish, meaning the science of light. So that will really be the predictive measure of events and things that will unfold through the lifetime. But the doshas themselves, like you may be more interested in a certain type of job or, you know, have specific kind of focus in life, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, not as much. I mean, they're just these three groups.
Okay.
We can't say that everybody who's Pitta dosha is gonna what. But if we start looking at the Vedic astrological chart, then we get extremely individualized information about the scope of the life cycle and the lifetime.
Wow.
Wow. That is really cool.
I have, Meg, is there something you want to jump in with? Because I've got another one.
I do, but it's kind of more so talking about for listeners who are interested in Ayurveda and want a place to start. I kind of wanted to go down that direction. So if you have something else that's more relevant to what we're talking about, we can finish with that and then we'll move on to it.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Let me ask this because that's a great way to wrap things up. So what do you have to say to people who might listen to this or have heard of Ayurveda, maybe at a super surfacey level, and they do that whole like, oh, that thing. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's not real. Mm-hmm. There's no science to that. Mm-hmm. There's no, you know, people who might put this in the category of being, quote, woo-woo or magical or made up or not based in. Do you get that? Does that come at you at all? And secondly, what do you say? How do you respond to that?
So, I never get it, basically. Maybe people don't bring it. They're like, no.
They're like, not with that chick.
Yeah, they're like, no. But this is the thing. That really, I mean, do people say that about Chinese medicine? Maybe not. I mean, I'm from California. Like, we're like, everything goes, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
right. And like, I'm going to say it. I roll my eyes at the crystal water bottles, but I really want one still. So, you know, they're really pretty.
that just sums something right? up right there.
So if Perfect. Somebody is out yes. there listening and wants to send me one of those crystal water bottles, just do it. Okay. So the thing about Ayurveda is that, I mean, it's a system. It's systematic. And whereas like Western herbalism, and please correct me if I'm wrong, somebody, you know, if it had a systematic philosophy behind it, like a really vast corpus of knowledge, maybe it's been lost because the history of herbalism in the West. But Ayurveda, it's a systematic science. It's not like made up by one woman in her basement playing with her crystals, right? Peace to you, one woman in your basement playing with your crystals. Like, you keep doing that. I am happy for you, you know, et cetera, right? But it's not channeled by one person. It's not channeled by one person who's like, this is the truth, right? And it's really time-tested. For example, on the Indian subcontinent, some forms of cancer are relatively non-existent. Why is that?
What?
Because, and the reason why we think that may be is that everybody is taking turmeric, not as a supplement. Taking it in synergy with other herbs and with other spices in the food.
Right. Okay.
So it's not just so I get really like feisty about supplements and turmeric lattes. I can talk for a long time about turmeric lattes and the depletion of the world's turmeric supplies for your goddamn latte. Like, it's not cool. We need it as medicine and food, and not everybody needs a turmeric latte. Okay, I'm done. My rant is done.
I fucking love it.
The rant is welcome here.
Right.
Yes.
So what we need is not more fads and not more like, you know, turmeric supplements and everybody's taking ashwagandha. Everybody should not take ashwagandha, okay? Mm-hmm. Ashwagandha is medicine for particular people. And for many people, it's very clogging to the liver. It's very omogenic. Mm-hmm. It's very heating, right? Mm-hmm. And so I really feel strongly about the overuse and overconsumption of so-called exotic herbs and spices at the depletion of the world's supply, especially as we move deeper into the era of climate change. And we need more knowledge, not more pill popping.
Love that. I love that so much. I'm so glad you brought that up too, because that is, I think a lot of people, especially here in this country, are very quick. Like, one of the questions that I get asked all the time is, well, can I just take a supplement for that?
Yeah.
And it's like, no.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yes, but no.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's so much more that I want you to teach us about. Mm-hmm. There's so much more that I have questions about, but they are like entire conversations. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. Meg, why don't you prompt your question?
Yeah, I basically just wanted to know for those listeners who are listening and they're very interested but in what we're talking about and they kind of, it's brand new to them, they don't really know where to start. What would your suggestions be? How can they learn more about their dosha? I mean, of course, obviously the recommendation would be to work with a qualified practitioner, but mm-hmm. I'm talking about those who maybe aren't ready for that yet, or sure. maybe who just want to learn a little bit more about it and see if it resonates with them mm-hmm. before they go to that step.
So most good Ayurvedic cookbooks will have a really nice synopsis of the doshas through the beginning of the book. Mm-hmm. Almost all of them do. And almost all of them are quite good. I mean, they've all been written by people who are deeply involved in Ayurveda. And so I'm not going to recommend a particular cookbook, but a nice Ayurvedic cookbook is really going to step you through, like, what are the doshas? What are the seasons? How do I eat for my body? And even if you just read the introduction, it will give you a really nice sense of what Ayurveda is. Also, most Ayurvedic cookbooks describe the daily routine or the dinacharya that many people are really involved in, you know, with oil massage and various oil pulling comes from Ayurveda, various other kinds of things. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I can talk about oil pulling for a long time, but various other things that we do to
we'll
keep the body.
Back.
Yeah, I know. Other things that we do to keep the body, you know, tuned up. Like many people give their cars more love than their bot.
Oh my God. Did you hear that, everybody?
Whoa.
Oh my gosh. I feel like that's
right?
So true.
Call out.
Yeah.
A call out, a call up.
Right.
Take note.
Yeah.
People.
You like change the oil in your car.
You put gas in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You pay your insurance.
Right.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. And you pay your insurance. Like before you have, like with no accident. And so much of Ayurveda is preventative. Like, you know, oftentimes people are coming into my practice. It's not that it's too late, but it's like, oh, if you were here doing this 3 years ago, like you wouldn't be experiencing this suffering now. But so much it takes that suffering to make a change. And so we're present for that. That's fine. But it's also like, can we start to move towards like this deep self-care? And I don't mean bubble baths. I mean like really caring for ourselves, really taking in the finest into our bodies, putting on our body the finest that we can, you know, all the time. And also the finest into the mind that we can, right? This also comes to like what we're bringing into the senses. Are we putting junk in the senses or are we putting beautiful, uplifting, wonderful podcasts like this one into our senses.
Oh, that's so nice.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
You know, on that note, can we wrap up by having you share with everybody where they can find you and how they might be able to work with you or learn from you?
Absolutely.
I know you've got a ton of stuff out there.
I really actually do. So, okay, if you are a member of Gaia TV, Gaia, like, and this is not a rep for them, like, it's just a rep for my show on them because I don't really get anything out of it. But there is a show that I filmed for Gaia called Thrive Self-Healing with Ayurveda. It's also on Amazon and you can watch it. It's 12 parts. If you watch the whole thing, you'll have a really nice understanding of Ayurveda.
That's
it's really great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I am going to do it.
Yeah, do it. And then, okay, so then I also run a free, at the base level, a free Mighty Network. So that's basically like a free kind of, not free, it's a private kind of social media / course platform for community building.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so I'll give you the URL for that. It's thebliss.mln.co. And people can join there for free and get connected into the community.
Awesome.
You can also visit my website, which is justinelimos.com. You can also follow on Insta. I put a lot of content up there at Justine Limos PhD. So,
yay! Yeah. Justine. Thank you so much. And all thank that stuff you. Will be in the show notes as well.
Yay, yay. So, and this was just one of my favorite podcasts I've done.
Oh, I'm so glad.
We can't wait. Yeah. We cannot wait to bring you back, yes. Honestly. Yeah, this is just so – we just scratched the surface, and I'm annoyed by it.
Well, I can be a regular guest. It's cool. It. You know, I can be like a featured guest.
Here's that your regular good. With Justine.
That's right. You just bring me back. Well, we have to talk about semiotics. Yeah. We have to talk about Vedic astrology. I mean, we really have to talk deeper about Ayurveda and, you know.
We do.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of fun things that we can do.
All right.
Justine, thank you
so much. Much
thank
love you to you
so
guys.
Much. Thank we'll you. See you next time. Yeah, thank yeah. you. Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Curious Women. If you love our show, you can support us by leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And if you know someone else who would really love our show, please share it with them too.